So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. It's first Sunday of November, even though it still feels like the first Sunday of September. Today's a family program. Okay, so their children and families are having their own Sangha gathering, but they'll be in a quarter of. Okay, good. So as some of you know, yesterday, it's been a busy weekend. Yesterday we had an all-day workshop here sponsored by the Mindfulness Institute, Buddhist Wisdom on Death and Dying. And we had over 60 people, so it was obviously a topic that people are interested in, and it was a very lively, informative gathering that I was involved in. Alex Lerner was involved from the physician's point of view and issues of death and dying, and Marilyn brought her experience as a clinical social worker working in hospice with the VA and with her own families. So it was a very meaningful sharing, again, because death and dying is probably the most significant event in a human being's life, and it is something that happens to all human beings, and as kind of the most immediate expression of impermanency, or significance to us as human beings, i.e. our lives do not go on forever, and the time of their ending is unknown and uncertain. So therefore, it's sort of a wake-up call to meditate on impermanence and death, and going back to the time of the Buddha until now, Buddhist practitioners have always daily reflected on impermanence and death, to put things in perspective, to remind us of that which is often we're in denial or is just not apparent to us, and to keep us present, knowing that this is really all we know, is this moment, and to imbue this moment and this day with purpose and meaning, since we do not want to die with any regrets of having a wasted life in meaningless pursuits. So anyhow, it was a good day, and thank you for those who participated and those who helped set up and break down. Oh, and just one more thing before we get into the teaching today. Several weeks coming in November, on a Saturday evening, every few months we do these movie nights. Have different movies, invite members, non-members to come. And I realized that the one coming up was on the same Saturday night as, what was it on? On the debates. These were the Democratic debates. And I thought, well, we shouldn't be competing with those. And so I thought we should reschedule. And somebody said, but isn't that kind of political, and aren't we? And so let me just say, to me, it's not political. It's not Republican versus Democrat. I mean, I would say the same whether whoever was debating. As Buddhists who care deeply about the transformation of our own personal suffering, and even more so, the suffering of the world and the inhabitants within it, human beings, animals, plants, even minerals, we need to be concerned about the sufferings of the world and our planet, and to understand that so much of the suffering is caused by human beings like ourselves. And it is because human beings are not enlightened and do not act from enlightened principles of understanding and compassion and love and respect and mutuality, etc., human beings have run amok in this world and continue to create great suffering for themselves and for others, and now we know for the sustainability or the survival of our planet. So this is, you know, we are in significant times, And fortunately or unfortunately, our own country is one of the great powers of this world, militarily, economically, and just influence in the world. It is like a, you know, what to me, you know, these kind of monster machines you often see on the road or in agriculture, you know, these gigantic, powerful machines, you know, and on top in a little cab is kind of one person, you know. And it's sort of like, you know, the American state is a very powerful engine. And there's a very small group of people who are driving it. And often they're not very good drivers. Or their agendas for where they want to drive are very destructive. So because of that situation, even though to me what we do at the grassroots and kind of creating communities that are living with a totally different set of values than often goes on in the political discourse, we have, you know, we cannot ignore that, what's going on. And so I think as socially engaged Buddhists, we need to be aware, especially at election time, to see if anybody, any of these so-called politicians or people who are running for office, are speaking to these very human values of the survival of our planet, of taking care of those who are suffering, right? Of wanting to ease the suffering of our planet and human beings on it. Who's speaking to that? Who's speaking with wisdom? Who's speaking with compassion? Who really sees what this life is about, right? That we are really here to take care of one another, not to harm one another. This goes back to the Buddha, right? So it was for that reason that I thought, well, you know, there aren't that many debates, and they're talking, hopefully, about significant issues, and we should not compete with that if people wanted to. And I felt by scheduling something that night, we were giving a message that I didn't want to give. So that's why I thought we should reschedule it. This doesn't mean everybody needs to watch a debate, but I think we are in very significant times. Those of us who attend to the news on what is called global warming, which is kind of a innocuous way of talking about, you know, really the significant destruction of life on this planet, it is very important that we pay attention to this. Because, you know, a number of years ago, it was like a debate about science. And today, it's really a debate about what's already happening. It's already happening. You know, Greenland is melting. You know, so this is significant. And we have children, we have grandchildren. We treat this planet as if it is just ours to use any way we can without any sense of continuity. So for that reason, I think people who understand cause and effect, people who, believe in caring for rather than exploiting each other and our planet, we need to pay attention to what's going on. So it's for that reason that I think we should reschedule that evening. Forgive me for getting on the soapbox. But I think these things need to be said. These are not ordinary times. And unfortunately, you know, the dialogue that goes on in halls of power seems to be almost totally irrelevant to the significant suffering that this planet and people in this world are going through. I mean, there was some headline yesterday. There are 60 million refugees in this world. I mean, it was, when I saw that number, I went, you know, that are fleeing wars and all kinds of social conflicts and, you know, economic disasters. I mean, 60 million is significant. Right? When you see those pictures of those poor refugees, you know, trekking through Europe, right? You know, with their children and in the cold. And I mean, these are desperate times. And we, In Buddhism, we learn that suffering is not something to turn away from, but suffering is something to turn toward and to respond to. Which brings me to the great path of awakening. Those of you who are members or come regularly know that in our community we do these things we call intensive practice periods that go on for months, and the people who are involved in them have made commitments in terms of daily practice and study and meditation and get together in groups and have mentors and all that kind of stuff, good things. And so at this right now we have two going on. We have about 35, 40 people in an intensive that's really dealing with the teachings of mindful living, the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh and the Plum Village tradition that are found in his books and teachings. And so that we have 35 or 40 people. And then we have, I think, nearly 70 involved with looking at these slogans. And I think those of you who have been coming there for a while have been hearing some teachings on it. I just gave a 4-day retreat here in Tampa last week on them. So those of you who are interested, I won't go into it today, but the teachings on the first 11 slogans, fairly comprehensive, are now posted on our website. You can listen to. So this text that goes back to a great Indian teacher around the year 1000, who came to Tibet from India, was invited there and taught there and brought this tradition with him of what are called these mind trainings. These very pithy verses, each one no more than a sentence, that really encapsulate very profound teachings in a very simple and direct way. We have looked at over these past weeks and in the retreat on the first 11. The first 11, there are really several main sections. First is the what are called the preliminaries, these basic reflections on impermanence, on cause and effect, on the defects, the fatal flaw of kind of worldly endeavors, and finally on the preciousness of human birth and the preciousness of the opportunities and the freedoms that each of us have being born a human being. So these are called the preliminaries. We do this before we even begin practice. It's like, why practice? It gives us a setting. The second section deals with sort of, and I'll just, you know, again, for those who are interested, there's many commentaries on this, but really has to do with the absolute, what's called absolute enlightened mind. It's really sort of how things really are. And it's primarily around the nature of phenomena and the nature of this mind that is aware. In Buddhism, you know, there's great emphasis put on, such as these are called mind trainings. Well, why is that? Because right now, right, we are not stones. We are not rocks. Right? You are aware of me. You are seeing me. You are hearing me. And you may be thinking about anything. But that's all going on where? In your mind. All your thoughts, all your feelings, all your ideas, all your perceptions, all your memories, all your fantasies, all your worries, all your angers, all your resentments, all your loves, all your hates, are all going on where? In your mind, our minds, right? This mind is the very source of our happiness. It is the very source of our suffering. So therefore, it is this mind that must be deeply understood, first of all. So that's why the first step is this, what's called absolute, to really understand the nature of mind. The second then goes to what's called relative, which is primarily how to be in this world. And this is really these wonderful teachings on compassion and what is called the alchemical exchange of self and other. It really sets forth a path of selflessness and concern for others, and really sets forth that in this world, not only do we need the wisdom that comes from understanding kind of the nature of our minds, but it's really on what operating principle do we enter the world of relationship. And, you know, this doesn't mean just intimate relationships. It means all relationships. How do we relate to each other? How do we relate to the world? And here it has this wisdom that comes from understanding the absolute nature of life, but it comes from compassion, this capacity to be utterly present to the fact that those who do not understand what's going on really in this world act out of ignorance and therefore create suffering for each other. How do we put an end to that? So that's what's called relative bodhicitta. That's the third section. And again, there are talks on the web, but there are many commentaries for those of you who are more interested. Now, the next section, what's called the fourth section, is called the transformation of adverse conditions into the path of awakening. This is the reason this is so powerful, is because most of us, how do we want our life to be? We want our life to be what?
Easy,
comfortable, smooth, pleasant. Anything else we want?
Worryless.
Peaceful. What?
Worryless.
Peaceful. Peaceful. We want, all of us, we want this kind of life, don't we? So that's what we want. So everything else is what? What we don't want. Right? So we've set up this life where the object of our life is comfort, ease, pleasantness, you know, everything going smoothly, right? Isn't that? That's the life we think we are entitled to. And everything that gets in the way of that is called aversive. Right? So please understand, when he says the transformation of adverse conditions is the path of awakening, don't just think, you know, war and famine and, you know, okay? You know, we find aversion from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, right? Anything that gets in the way of our pleasantness, you know, and they obviously, and often they are even our loved ones, we can have little aversion to. That's called what? Irritation, mild, you know, that's aversion. So all day long, wanting this comfortable, pleasant, easygoing, everything working life, we are constantly faced with what? Aversity, right? So this statement is profound because usually we think our relationship to aversity, right? And for many people, that could even be 3/4 of what's going on in their minds, right? Irritated about something or other. Right? So in our pursuit of pleasant, calming, everything going our way, life, right? Anything that gets in the way is aversity, or we might say, even if we are so-called spiritually minded, right, that all these adverse situations are getting in the way of what? Of my practice. Right? See, I'm here. Did you see? It's all getting in the way of my practice. Because, right, because we want to be calm and peaceful, loving human beings. And all these aversive situations and all these jerks in the world are all getting in the way of me being the way I want to be. Does everybody get what I'm talking about? All right. So please understand, you know, 2,000 years ago, people were dealing with the same issues and figured it out. Okay? So we don't have to keep struggling. So, of this section, the first slogan is, when evil fills the world and its inhabitants, change adverse conditions into the path of awakening. This is profound. What does it say? Adverse conditions are not an obstacle, a detour, a distraction from the path of awakening. They are the path of awakening. Let me say that again. Adverse conditions are the path of awakening. It's important that we understand how profound these little statements are. Right? We think the path of awakening is what? Mindfulness. Drinking a nice cup of tea, washing the dishes mindfully, taking nice walks in nature mindfully, right? Coming to Sangha, being mindful, right? See, we think that's the path, don't we? And we think adversity and the people who give us a hard time, the people who don't do things the way we want, and all the situations which don't go our way when things don't work. We think that's what? It's like some other realm, you see? People wonder, why is it I get up in the morning, you know, I have my tea or my coffee, I sit down and I do my meditation, and read my spiritual books, right? And I really feel good, don't I? And then I walk out into life, and it's like, you know, it's gone in 10 minutes, right? And then we kind of go into this other realm for the next 8 or 10 hours, and then we come home, exhausted, right? And some of us look forward to taking out our spiritual books again and reading them, sitting down and doing some practice, washing the dishes mindfully. Can you see it? So we have these little nice spiritual bookends to our day, and then we have our day, and they have no connection. Right? Because what, you know, because here we're in control, aren't we? You know, we can control the environment. You know, turn off the phone, boom, 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 right? Burn some incense, light lights, maybe play some nice, you know, New Age music in the background to calm us. Everything's under control. And then we get out in the world and it's like, you know, same old, same old. Is that clear? So this is speaking to that. This is profound that we understand. Adversity, and again, adversity is not just all the big challenges that often slam us, right? But all the little aversions, all the things that we are aversive to throughout the day, the people and situations, this is the path of awakening. Now, how can this be? Right? Well, first of all, if we get over this fundamental belief that the purpose in life is to be comfortable and safe and in control and to have everything go my way, right? That belief right there is a very deep source of difficulty. It will create difficulty. You know, so we have to widen our view of life to include everything and everybody. Okay? And not even have ideas about should and shouldn't be happening. Everything is happening, right? And actually, from a point of view of transformation, aversive conditions are often more inspiring of transformation than pleasant circumstances. Because in pleasant circumstances, it's easy, isn't it? Right? It's like they say in the Tibetan tradition, you know, when things are going well in the world, everybody looks like a great practitioner. Right? It's easy to be happy, right, when everything's going well. Right? But the sign of a true practitioner who is happy when things aren't going well. Is that clear? You don't get any points if everything's going your way and you're saying, well, I'm really doing well these days. Yeah, we're only doing well because things for a certain period of time are going our way. But when things aren't going our way, watch what happens. So that kind of equanimity, that kind of peace of mind, that kind of calmness, that kind of open-heartedness is not of great depth, is it? Because it has no strength to it. It's easily lost when, quote-unquote, aversive conditions arise. You notice what happens. As soon as aversive conditions arise, you might have walked out your door and you've been very calm and happy. And as soon as aversive conditions arise, any aversion arrives, you're off getting what? Angry, resentful, blah, blah, blah. Right? Your peace of mind is gone. Your mind is agitated. And that continues throughout the day. Is that clear? So we have to really see that all situations that arise, especially any ones we have aversion to, everything is the path of awakening. Every incident that occurs is a moment for transformation if we are awake and practicing. Okay? And then it gives two slogans to support this. Now, the first is sort of, we might say, internal. And that slogan is, drive all blame into one. The second slogan, which is about external, is to be grateful to everyone. Okay? Very simple. Here it is. This makes it so simple. That's the power of these ancient slogans for people who want to awaken. So, we go through life endlessly aggravated, bothered, saddened, angered, resentful, worried, scared, you know, endless emotionality, endless negative mind states. And essentially, what is driving them is what? A fundamental belief that the problem is out there. It is, we might call that blaming, right? If only they would not do this, if only they would do this, not do this, if only this one was different and that one was different, if only the world was different, if only, right? If only my parents had been different, if only my partner, my spouse was different. I mean, every reason we have for our own unhappiness, we believe is caused by things outside ourselves. Is that clear? We, the last person in the world, we hold responsible for our minds, the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, etc., that are rising in the mind. We hold everybody else responsible except ourselves. Is that clear? I mean, please, don't just nod. Do you kind of understand what I'm talking about? Think how your own mind thinks. Right? If only this would change, and that would change, and this person would change, and that had been different, and this would be different, then I'd be what? Happy. Right? So my job is what? Getting all those people to change. Because they're the source of every problem I have. Is that clear? Now, the problem with that is what? Well, you're right. There are two fundamental problems with that. One is we can't control everything and everybody. And there are many people in here who do a valiant efforts. But the truth is, no matter how much energy you put into controlling everybody in your life and every situation and trying to keep it all under control and get everything done just the way you want, it is always breaking down. Is that clear? Has anybody noticed that? Okay, it is breaking down not because what you often think, which is, I got to put more effort into this. Or I got to read some self-help book to kind of really get me how I can get more organized and, you know, more, right? You know, but it's all, you know, more, communicate differently, all in the service of what? Getting everybody and everything under my control. You know? So, that is one major problem, that we can't bring it all under control. The second major problem is that they're not the problem. The second thing is we're the problem, because when we talk about an agitated mind, a worried mind, an angry mind, a resentful mind, a scared mind, a sad mind, we're all talking about what? Our minds. These mind states, these feeling states, these emotional states, or these thoughts are all arising where? Think about it. Where are they all arising? In us. They're not arising out there. Right? The agitation is in our minds. And we think they're causing it. You know, did you ever think, how do they get into my mind? Right? I mean, people talk this way. Oh, you know, they're causing me to be this way. And I want to know, how do they get into your mind? Did you give them the keys? I mean, how do they get in there? They come in when you're sleeping or something? Crawling through the window and coming through your ear? Right. You know? ESP? Have they implanted some kind of device in your mind? You always hear their voice? Right? I mean, that's called insanity. But yet we believe, we talk this way. Right? Is this clear? We can't control it. And the problem is us. The suffering is us. The agitation, it's all us. Okay? Now. So this slogan, drive all blame into one, when we are in the realm of adversity, aversion, there's only one place to look for the cause and the solution, in my own mind. Is that clear? So this is going to save each and every one of us lots of work, because we spend an amazing amount of time ruminating, obsessing about how everything and everybody is the cause of our suffering. Think about how much time we waste from morning till night, right? On this impossible process, when the solution is right here. Drive all blame into one. What is that one in Buddhism? That one is the ego, the self, the obsession with me, my. Because that thing that wants the world and everyone in it to be the way it wants, and when it's not, it gets all kinds of emotionality, is this thing called myself. Now, everybody in this room has their own unique self. Is that clear? That is the thing, you know, when you hear a little voice inside telling you to, what's going on in the world and causing you to emotionally react in a certain way, that's yourself manifesting in thoughts that are contaminated with me. The self only thinks about what? Itself. Right? In every situation, it's only thinking about me. Right? You know, that which is always wanting life to be a certain way, it means what? It's my agenda. Right? I want life and everybody in it and everything and the world to always unfold according to my agenda. Right? Is that clear? That's the self. That's the I word. That's the ego. That's the fundamental insanity that each of us participate in. And we act it out in the world, and it causes suffering to ourselves, unsatisfactoriness to ourselves, and then we just bleed it out to everybody else. Because why do we act out on everybody else? Because why? Because we think they're responsible for how I feel. So it's not enough that we cause suffering to ourselves. We bring it forth in our actions, in our speech. Right? And so it just spreads. Drive all blames into one is so liberating. Okay? Because it immediately points to the source of my unhappiness, the source of my problem, and again, through other practices or whatever, it gives us the answer. But the main thing, for now, is to just take that away with you. Drive all blames into one. The one is the self. Whenever you're in any kind of aversive situation, any kind of aversive emotions, feelings, look to your own mind and look to the self that is under it. I assure you, there always will be an I, me, my statement about how whatever's going on should not be going on the way it should. I mean, the way it is. Why? Because the self only wants its own agenda to be unfolding in the world. Isn't that true? I mean, please point out if I'm missing something. Really think about this. This is so simple, so obvious to anybody who looks. And luckily, we don't even have to discover this for ourselves, right? The manual is here. It was written 2,000 years ago. We just need to kind of access it and apply it. Follow the directions. Any questions? I'm serious. I mean, anybody think, again, doesn't mean that, things don't happen in this world. Things that were unexpected. Sickness, disease, accidents, natural catastrophes, death. I mean, all kinds of things happen. But the suffering, the anger, the resentment, the fear, the despair that arises within our own minds is arising because there's a part of us that doesn't want whatever's going on to be happening. Right? Yes.
Now that I recognize this power of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not blaming the outside world. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I notice the self is really unpleasant. It's jealous.
Yeah, yeah. Right, and jealousy means what? Jealousy means, I should have what they have.
Yeah.
I should have what they have.
And it's so automatic.
Well, we have cultivated it. That's been our practice. Right, we have practiced self-centeredness for our life. I mean, we didn't know better. It's not like we're bad people. Most of us are good people, We want to be happy. Right? We'd like to be loving, caring to other people. We want to have a calm mind. We want to be free of fear and anxiety, right? I mean, we're good people. We just don't know the source of the problem. Right? This is the powerful message of teachings, right? They show us the way. It's like this one, I always thought the problem was out there. I always thought she was the problem. And if I could just get her to act the way I want, then I'd be happy. And the world would be peachy. Right? Go on, yes.
But Fred, how do I live with the this self, or, you know, I want this self to transform because I'm not a self.
Mm-hmm.
But it is haunting.
No, it is not haunting you. It is just because you have cultivated it for decades, it is just used to being listened to, right? It is under the mistaken impression that every time it shows up, you will listen, right? You know, and you have, it has shown up and you have listened to it, indulged it, obsessed, ruminated for, you know, decades and decades and decades, right? That's all. So it's going to keep showing up because it thinks it has an open invitation, right? Any rotten rumination that I send to this person, you know, it's like, you know, I can, you know, I don't have to, you know, it's like a grocer who goes, God, this guy, I can give him rotten fruit. He doesn't know the difference. You know, I'll save the really good stuff, you know, for people who know the difference. But this person, you know, anything I give him, they'll take. Many of us are like that in our minds. Outwardly, you know, we kind of discriminate between, you know, good fruit and bad fruit, right? Between healthy things and unhealthy things, between beautiful things and ugly things, right? Out here in the world, we're great discriminators. In our mind, it's like, you know, whatever comes, you know, I'll eat. You know, whatever distorted message this mind of mine gives me, I'll listen to. I'll indulge. I'll even act on it. Okay, so that has to change. There has to be a gatekeeper. There has to be mindfulness. There has to be somebody who is watching the mind and can discriminate with those kinds of thoughts and perceptions that are healthy and those that are unhealthy. I mean, there's no other way. You know, we have to establish a gatekeeper that has criteria and know what's good and not good and healthy for the mind and not healthy. And that will, you know, it's not going to change overnight. You know, especially if we've been indulgent for decades and decades. But again, at the end of the day, what are these things? They're thoughts. You know, what's a thought? You look right at a thought, what do you see? Nothing. They disappear immediately. That's how powerful they are. People go, wow, I have this incredible, powerful thought inside me. You know, and my, you know, I'm always kind of excited by that. I always say, well, yeah, I'd like to see it. Can you show it to me? Right? And then they get this kind of silly grin. I say, well, come on, I want to see it. Anything as powerful as that. I mean, you know, I've obviously, you know, just been mucking around with little tiny thoughts. You got a really big, powerful one. You know, I want to see this. Like, you know, will you show it to me? And then they get this sheepish grin. Well, I can't really do that. Well, why can't you do that? Well, you know, they're not real. Oh, so you have this terrible, horrible thought that just overtakes you that you know is not real. Well, that's called insanity. To think something is real that really isn't. Right? And that makes you even insaner because an insane person doesn't know that. They think these things are real, right? But we are. I mean, we're so crazy that we even say, I know these things aren't real, but, you know, I still believe they're real. Think about that. I mean, that's really crazy. Yes?
I wanted to share about my mother, who I share with the nothing disturbed her. She didn't have bad news. She didn't dislike anything except the drug ads on TV and Leslie Stahl's hair. Those were the only bulbs to do.
Mm-hmm.
She just didn't get disturbed by anything. She was peaceful,
yes.
Accepting, good. Non-judgmental. And I found that very annoying.
No. Thank you. So for the sake of time, you know, what is the, beside the, you know, this work we need to do on the transformation, understanding transformation of this distorted view we have, and to really see that, you know, drive all blames into one and really see this empty nature of what the self is. But then externally, right, with everyone and all these aversive situations and all these aversive people and all these jerks and all these people give us a hard time, and, you know, right? How do we relate to them, right? How do I relate to them, okay? Right? How do I relate to these situations of my childhood and, you know, blah, 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 right? How do I relate to these things? Which is the next slogan. Be grateful to everyone. Very powerful. It means be grateful to everyone / everything. There it is. What's the antidote? Be grateful to everyone. Okay? Now, what does that mean? Right? Obviously, people, situations that go our way, situations that we find pleasant, situations that support our comfort and our ease and our well-being, are we grateful to those? Yes. Okay? So that's, we understand, that we get, all right? I can be grateful, you know, yeah, I can realize, yeah, I gotta focus more on all, you know, people do what they call a gratitude meditation, right? But usually their gratitude meditation is like all the good things I have in my life, right? We kind of take the inventory, so therefore I should be grateful, am I right? So that's only half the practice, okay? Again, because most of us are so ungrateful to everything, it's good to just, you know, get up in the morning and be, you know, grateful I'm alive, my eyes still see, my, you know, I can, you know, there's no war going on around me. I mean, you know, this is great. Got a roof over my head, mattress, you know, air conditioning. Just stroll into the kitchen, you know, like before I go to the toilet, you know, I don't have to, you know, go to the outhouse, you know, in the freezing weather or the hot, you know what I mean? Right? I mean, this is great. Right, go into the, you know, flush toilet, boop. Yeah, wow, doesn't get any better than this. All right, go into the kitchen, fresh water is available. Right, can make my beverage of choice. I mean, how fortunate, right? And yet we're in oblivion. Okay, so learning to be grateful for all the good things in our life is good. It's better than being ungrateful. But this is much further than that. Be grateful to everyone and everything. All the situations that we call aversive, all the people that we call aversive, that we have aversion to, we don't want them to be happening. Why should we be grateful to them? Because if our purpose in life is not the cultivation of resentment and anger, if the purpose of our life is not to cultivate despair and hurt and disappointment, if the purpose of our life, you know, is not to always be angry and resentful and afraid, if the purpose of our life is to liberate ourselves from all the emotional afflictions, right? Or at least somewhat. How do we do that? You know, how do you, you know, do you ever think, well, how do you do that? You do it when they arise, right? You transform experience when it arises, right? So if you want to rid yourself of anger, if you want to rid yourself of your need to control, if you want to rid yourself of your fears, if you want to rid yourself of your despairs and your hurts and your disappointment and your jealousies, etc., right? If that's really what you want to do rather than continuing to indulge them, therefore, any person or situation that brings that up, you are what? Grateful to. Right? Because they are bringing up things that are already inside us. We have the seeds of anger. We have the seeds of resentment. We have the seeds of fear. We have the seeds of unsatisfactoriness. We have the seeds of judgment. We have this, right? We have, these seeds are all in us. Transformation, we have to transform these seeds. So any situation that brings it up, if we can immediately meet it with the antidote, transformation immediately occurs. Right? Immediately, that which started out as aversion becomes something positive. If it wasn't for this, I would never be able to practice that. So as I've said many times, you know, loving people who love you, you know, you don't get any credit for that. That's easy, right? Loving people who don't love you, right? You know, being patient with easy people, you don't get any credit with that, right? How do you develop patience? Only with people who drive you crazy. Right? How do you develop tolerance? I mean, we talk about, yeah, we need to be more tolerant in this society. Right? Intolerance breeds separation and aggression. It can lead to all kinds of things, intolerance. Right? You know, where are we going to learn how to be intolerant, let's say? Only when people bring up that in us and we can see it. Oh, thank you. I didn't see that really I still have the seeds of intolerance in me. Now I can work with it. Thank you. Thank you. Difficult situations, thank you. Wow, I didn't realize what a big ego I still had. Right? Remember, I'm noticing what's going on now. So to be grateful to everyone in every situation replaces that usually aversive relationship to difficult situations to one of gratitude. Be grateful to everyone. Things go your way. Things are pleasant. Things are under control. You're grateful. Things aren't going your way. Things are difficult. Things are unpleasant. You're grateful. That's called equanimity. That's how you cultivate it. It's this mind that is willing to understand all situations as the path to awakening. Drive all blames into one, be grateful to everyone. Drive all blames into one, be grateful to everyone. That's the transformative process in two slogans. I mean, there are lots of other pieces. But these slogans, these mind trainings are key because they are helping us with very simple words how to retrain the mind. Right? It is our minds that need to be retrained so we perceive things differently than we do. Now, so we have a few minutes before they come in. Are there any questions about this? Anything not clear? Yes.
Okay, so in the course of your talk today, I felt myself go from, yeah, I get it, you know, sometimes I want things differently than the way they are, and the problem with that is that I want something different.
Yeah.
If I could just accept it the way they are, mm-hmm. then I wouldn't have a problem. Okay, then you went into the grateful part of it. And for me, where I went back to was, there's certain things that what I can be grateful for is that they're not going on now. I don't know what I can.
Yeah.
To have experienced. But I can be grateful for that they don't want now. So then the next thing is, how do I do that? How do I?
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not going to want now, so what I do
is
I recognize it had come up and I said, okay, be grateful that it's over, because that's all I can do right now.
Yeah, that's good.
Just kind of
So
I don't know that I'm going to be so far that I can say thank you for XYZ,
Yeah. So let me, they're asking me to repeat. So the, It's a wonderful question. We don't, you know, it's a deep question. Yeah, it's a deep question. But it's like, yeah, it sounds good, Fred. And I kind of get the big picture. But in truth, right now, there are things in life that I can just barely, at the very least, be resigned to that they happen. But to be grateful to the people or the person, the situation, I'm not there yet. Yeah, so we begin where we are. Okay, that's the bottom line. You know what I mean? We see the big picture, but we get where we are. Again, it's not like, I was abused as a child and I'm grateful to that. You know, it's not, you know, I'm grateful to my perpetrator. You know, it's not like that at all. It's to be grateful to everything is to go, I can take that experience and I can take the feelings within me and I can turn it around. Okay? And I can understand that because of that terrible situation, out of it came understanding. Out of it came compassion for those people who suffer from those kinds of things still. You know, that's what it means to be grateful. It's not like kind of this, you know, rosy, rose-colored glasses. Oh, everything's wonderful. War is wonderful. You know, people learn lessons from them. You know, more war, the better. You're right. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm afraid some people might go this way. It doesn't mean that. It means that every situation, even the most difficult and painful, out of that, there is something that we can transform, something can we learn, and that situation, whatever it was, is helping us heal and transform. Is that clear? That's what it means. So don't think it's like that other thing. That's not what it's about. Okay? I think there's somebody knocking at the door. So why don't we end for today? Thank you.